Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. We are going to focus on your lawn today. How's it looking? Does it have dead spots? Crabgrass? Is it underwater? Well, we have some solutions for you, I hope, with our guest, Doug Soldat. Professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, specializes in turfgrass, urban soils, nutrient management, water resources, testing soil, landscape irrigation. So lots of things that he can take up with you today. And so what questions do you have about improving your lawn or other turf kinds of questions? What do you want to know about reseeding? Love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Doug Soldat, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Great to be here, Larry. Good to see you.
It's kind of funny because on a dry day here in southern Wisconsin, or at least in Madison when I come home, you hear the lawnmowers going because the dry days seem to be few and far between.
That's the truth. More rain on the way, too.
And more rain on the way in southern Wisconsin. Some parts of the north have been dry.
Mm-hmm. That's true, yeah. A lot of variability around there.
Yeah, a lot of variability. Well, what's it done to the lawns, this water?
Yeah, lawns are pretty tolerant. So, you know, there's two ways that you can kill a grass from too much water. It can be underwater for so long that the grass runs out of oxygen, a plant dies. That's pretty rare. Kentucky bluegrass is our main grass in Wisconsin. It's very tolerant of being submerged. But when you combine standing water with heat, you can get a condition called scald, where the temperature of the water is actually too high and it kills the grass. In my experience, those two issues have been pretty rare around the state. So aside from wet basements and all the trouble that caused, the grass has come out okay.
Well, we have many, many callers already online to talk with you. So what do you say we go right to the phones here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Marie and Madison, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. So it's interesting. Just this morning, I was in a staff meeting, and we talked about how do we increase infiltration rates on municipal lawns. Or, you know, I typically work with farmers on trying to increase infiltration on crop fields, but we were talking about, you know, with all this rain in Madison and the flooding that happened, really what we're looking at is an infiltration problem, right? And so I just wanted to get your ideas on how we increase infiltration on lawns.
Oh, this is one of my favorite topics, Marie. It's you know, so we when we put roads and driveways and rooftops, that's areas that used to be soil where the rain could soak in. But now, if you look at go to Google Maps and you look at a typical Madison neighborhood, almost half of the ground cover now is impervious surface, which means that if it rains an inch, you have basically 2 inches of water that have to infiltrate into the existing soil areas. So that presents a challenge in itself. And then the other thing that we usually add on top of that is construction, home construction practices, where they scrape off the topsoil, compact the subsoils, which tend to have a high clay content here in Dane County and much of the state, and then they bring the topsoil back down, and then they reduce the ability that to infiltrate. So the root of it is during construction practices, make sure that you're not compacting that subsoil, incorporating compost, and then grow healthy plants to do it. But in most cases, those things haven't happened.
And, you know, I know you've talked about this in the past, that a good, healthy lawn is, you know, keeping a good, thick lawn is really good for a situation like this, I believe.
Yeah, right. And that's sort of counterintuitive, is that if you want to increase the water it soaks into the ground, one of the best ways to do is to slow it down, keep it from getting to the street. And the way to slow it down is to have a thick lawn. So research that was conducted in the 90s here at UW showed over 6 years, the best way to do that was to fertilize 2 or 3 times a year to increase the density of the lawn.
What about rain gardens? Do you do anything with rain gardens?
Yeah, we've studied rain gardens at the O.J. Norton Turfgrass Research Facility. And in fact, we compared the DNR's recommended specifications for a rain garden and then to one that was just covered in a typical lawn. And they both improved water infiltration into the soil for the same reason. So we think that it not so much the community of plants there, but the shape and the getting a basin with a good soil for the water to soak into.
Yeah. So keep your lawn healthy, and if you're in a situation where it might work, to have a rain garden on your property. Several of them have gone in my neighborhood, I know.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple more points on this. If you do have poor infiltration, you can use a core aeration service in the spring and the fall to reduce that compaction. And we've also had really good success with adding compost, top dressing compost onto lawns, and that helps build up and improve the soil over time.
Now, compost, what are we talking here in terms of the type of compost, perhaps, and then the depth that, or the amount that you would put on?
Sure, good questions. Yeah, there's all kinds of different composts. You want to make sure it's a high quality, reputable source of compost, because you can end up doing damage if you have, you know, pieces of glass in there or high salt content. So check out your compost and make sure it's a good source. And then for the amount, about a quarter inch in the spring, quarter inch in the fall is what we recommend. And it doesn't have to be precise, but it's just enough where you can kind of cover the grass. And when you rake it in, you can see the grass again. That's about the right amount.
All right. Well, thanks very much for that question. It was perfect to start the show here. Let's take another call. Helen in West Salem, it's your turn. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I have a problem. Last December 1st, we removed an ash tree, and they took out the tree plus some of the stump. So they left it nice and level, smoothed it over. So this spring, I planted some grass seed, and it just didn't come up. And I thought, is the seed dead? And I put some in a glass of water, and after about 2 weeks, there was one little tiny sprout. But that was it. So I added more seed, and I had raked it and so forth. So anyway, I'm just not getting any grass, and I need some help. Can you help me with this? Sure. It's about a 6-foot diameter space.
Sure.
This level.
Great. So now this is the perfect time to try seeding. Spring's not the best time to seed. There's a lot of problems can go on. You might have purchased some old seed, like you said, that wasn't viable anymore. But I would go to a garden center, pick out a mixture of grass containing Kentucky bluegrass and fine fescue, and then make sure that you have good seed to soil contact, so that you rake up the seed, cover it about a quarter of an inch, and then tamp it down with your feet, cover it with a mulch, and then with the weather conditions in the fall, it should be perfect, and that grass should start to come up.
And the other option, of course, is the option I would choose.
Yeah, me too.
Especially at a size, that size, 6 feet, I'd get myself some sod.
Sod it, yeah.
Yeah, so then you got it right away.
I'll tell you this. I grow grass for a living, and every time I seed a new stand of grass, I don't know if it's going to work out. There's so many things that's going to go wrong. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do. For small areas, sod is a really good solution.
Because it's done.
Yeah,
and it's easy to put in, and oh, man.
Yeah, let the sod growers do the hard work.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Helen, for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's take a call from Dory next. Dory in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Dory.
Hi. I'm calling because we had our home recently remodeled, and the contractor did a great job, except he scraped all of the topsoil off from about 2/3 of our yard, and nothing will grow there. I mean, it looks like a moonscape with a couple of weeds in it, and I'm wondering what I could do to restore a lawn.
Yeah, that's too bad, but that's really common. It's the subsoil has usually a higher clay content. It's likely been compacted, and then has almost no nutrients in it. The organic matter is all in the topsoil. So you have a couple options. You could bring in a load of compost and have that worked in and tilled in to bring back organic matter and increase the infiltration. You could also just purchase some topsoil and place that on top. Usually what the contractors will do is they'll bring in about 2 inches of topsoil, which is usually just the bare minimum that you'd need. So we like to get a root zone that can be maybe 6 inches, and probably the easiest way to do that is to till in some high quality compost into that subsoil.
Yeah. So, and then would you, before that, would you do something to kind of loosen that clay up or not?
Yeah, well, when you bring in the topsoil and you till it in, that'll loosen.
You want to till
clay.
It in.
Yeah, you don't want to put the compost just on top. You don't want to mix. You want to mix that into about 6-inch depth. And that should work. Like I said, the other solution though is to loosen it and then bring topsoil on top, which is kind of what it used to look like.
Yeah, there you go, Dory. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too. Number to call as we talk lawns with Doug Soldat, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Dan in Belgium, it's your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a friend of mine who claims he's got a real nice thick lawn, and he claims every spring he just overseeds with seed on that lawn, and my wife said that we should do that too, and I maintain that I don't think that does any good because I don't know how that seed's ever going to make contact with the soil and if that seed is actually being used.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, a lot of people will do that. They'll purchase seed, they're not happy with their lawn, they'll go out and they'll just kind of throw the seed on top of the lawn and think that's going to help. And almost every case, it doesn't. You're feeding the birds, I think. If you want to get new grass to grow in an existing lawn, the best way to do that is to use a device called a slit seeder, which actually cuts shallow slits, maybe 1-2 inches apart, and it drops seed into those slits. That will work. The other option is to actually shave your grass down really, really low and rake it. So, but just throwing seed out there has a very, very low chance of success.
Email your neighbor may also be fertilizing and proper fertilization, and that's what's helping his lawn.
Yeah, yeah. We see this a lot with people who do more than one thing at once. It's like a placebo effect. They do four things and something happens, and they attribute it to the wrong thing. In a lot of cases, just good weather, fertilizer can make grass really shoot out of the ground right now.
Dan, does that help?
Yeah, it does. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Tom emailed to say that mowed lawns with exotic species exacerbate flooding.
So, exotic species, the Kentucky bluegrass, I think is what he's probably referring to here. Yeah, I don't know. The flooding is obviously due to massive amounts of rain and lots of impervious surfaces. Certainly, you know, there's almost no plant community that's going to prevent the flooding that we've seen here in southern Wisconsin. In the research that we've done, though, mowed lawns, Kentucky bluegrass, help water infiltrate into the soil, similar to other you know, communities of landscape plants.
Hmm. John in Heartland, let's go to you now. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Established lawn, and it's getting overrun by, I'll call weed grasses, quack grass, crab, you know, I don't know if it's crab grass, but quack grasses, things like that. You know, the whole neighborhood's kind of going in that direction, I guess, you know, so it's kind of throughout the yards. And what do you do about them? How do you get rid of that stuff? You know, short of stripping the lawn and starting over.
Yeah. So this, I'll say, you know, I've been here for maybe 12 years or so, and this has been the worst year for crabgrass and foxtail that I've ever seen. And I attribute that to, we had a really late cold spring.
Yeah.
And then June was wet, July was hot and wet, and that's just perfect conditions for crabgrass and foxtail to get established. Now, there's not much you can do. Once those grasses come up, now there's not much you can do to get rid of them, but what I would encourage people who want to prevent it next year is to use a pre-emergent herbicide. Around the best time is when the forsythia are in full bloom, those bright yellow blooms, or when the soil temperatures are about 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Typically we're looking at April-ish timing for that. But if you put down a pre-emergent herbicide, that'll prevent the crabgrass and the foxtail from growing and establishing and allow your Kentucky bluegrass to fill in those areas where it exists now.
Yeah, there you go, John. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at the UW-Madison, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer. For Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network. We are taking a look at your lawn today on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Doug Soldat, from the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Join in with your lawn questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Phil emailed to say he's had his lawn treated for the last 5 years for sod worms, grubs, etc., including this year in late May. Looks like he has a bumper crop of moths associated with sod worm flying right now. Should or can it be treated again before fall? Kind of strange to me.
No, usually, so with grubs, usually, you know, the life cycle is really important. So I would say get a positive ID. So you say it's sod webworm. That's good. And then follow UW's got an excellent entomology lab. They'll tell you the life cycle and the best time to get it, along with chemical and also just cultural practices. But typically in late in the year, thing is the worst time to attempt to address it. Sod webworms are not grubs that chew on roots that we worry too much about. They're not typically pests that are doing damage to lawns.
Okay, there we go. On the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab, you go on there, they have lots of information about sod worms and a whole bunch of other things as well.
Yeah, PJ is so good.
Yeah, yep. Very good. Dennis in Elizabeth, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Morning, Larry. The question I've got is we have had built a new home, and our lawn is about 2 years old, and on the north side of the house, we're kind of backed up against the woods, so we have an area that's probably 90% shaded, and I'm having some trouble getting the grass established here. I'm just wondering what would be the best variety of seed to use in that heavily shaded area.
Yeah, grasses evolved in open savannas. They don't like shade. So the options I'm going to give you, keep that in mind. They're the best options we have for shade, but in general, grasses just don't do well in shade. So for this situation, you're looking for fine fescue. Chewing's fine fescue, hard fescue, red fescue's okay, but I would concentrate on looking for chewings and hard fescues. Those are going to have the best chance of survival in the deep shade, but 90%, boy, you're kind of on that verge where maybe a different type of planting will work, a ground cover of some sort that's adapted to shade. But fine fescues are your best shot.
Give it a shot, Dennis. Thanks for calling. And speaking of shade, I bet Bernie in Shamrock has a question that relates to shade, maybe. Hi, Bernie. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a problem with moss in the lawn. It's an established lawn, and it's I have a company come in and fertilize it four times a year, and I've got a sprinkler system and so on and so forth, but I can't seem to get rid of that moss. What seems to be the problem there?
Where do you observe the moss growing?
I'm sorry, repeat that?
Where do you see the moss in your lawn? Is it in shady areas, or, you know, what parts of the lawn do you see it in?
Mostly around the house a little bit, but it can be anywhere.
Yeah. Well, so moss is usually an indication of wet and shade. And so near the house makes sense for the shade. And also when you have shady areas, do you irrigate your lawn?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that might be the root of it. I would say next season, the way I like to use irrigation systems is almost if you don't have it. So you turn it off, and then you only click it on when you notice that your lawn is starting to turn brown or wilting. And then you turn it off again. But if you set it on a schedule, you tend to overwater your lawn, and you encourage these plants like moss to come in because there's always moisture near the surface. Grasses, and you're going to get deeper roots out of your grass if you let that lawn go drier. So let's start there. Let's shut off the irrigation system. Only click it on a few times when you think the lawn is turning brown. And I think you're going to start to see that moss fade away.
Yeah, there you go, Bernie. Thank you so much for calling. And Joan in Lake Mills. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I cannot understand for the life of me why people want to keep poisoning out the broadleaves in their lawn. I have never done it, and ever since I was a little girl and my mother would take me out in the lawn with a little picking pan and a knife to pick those greens when they come up, nature is supplying us with medicine, medicinal food, and the pollinators love it. They eat from the flowers that come up from those broadleaves, and I just don't understand people. Why do they want to poison their lawn?
That's a good point, Joan. That's something that we advocate too. Is a weed is only a weed if you don't want it there, right? And why? So a lot of the things we see, especially clover, like you said, it's a great pollinator plant. Provides nitrogen to the lawn. So in the pre World War II, Scots sold their grass seed with clover mixed into it, and then we had inexpensive chemical controls, and people said, well, I can get the lawn to be perfectly uniform, and they decided to do that. And now we're going back to the methods where we're saying, probably one of the best mixes for a sustainable lawn in Wisconsin is a mixture of Kentucky bluegrass, fine fescue, and clover. You don't need to fertilize it. It looks nice and green for most of the year. The bees are happy. So, there's a lot of good options to have diversity in a lawn. Dandelions, like you said, you can eat them. They have nice deep tap roots, which help build the soil structure. So there's a lot of plants that many consider weeds that have some definite value to them.
Yeah. Good point, Joan. Thank you so much for calling. Chad in Madison, we turn to you next. Hi, Chad.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call. I guess I'm having a problem with the topsoil, and I believe it has to do with the worms we're getting on the surface. Eventually, the grass thins, even other vegetation, and washes away. I'm trying to figure out a way to deal with it, but I think in my research it did mention jumping worms or something or other. And it's, just trying to resolve that.
Are there jumping worms on your lawn? I mean, have you observed them and they are jumping?
Yeah, they're larger. You pick them up. They're riding. I mean, I believe that's what it is. And so I'm just trying to understand if there's some way to get vegetation to grow, because we're on a slope too, a lot of the yard. So.
Yeah, I don't think the jumping worms eat grass roots. I could be wrong. I haven't come across that yet. And typically what eats roots are white grubs, kind of fatter C-shaped things that, that turn into various, or various insects. Is this a shady area? Is there anything else that you've noticed besides the worms that, that you think could be contributing to the lawn thinning out?
It's shaded in parts, but definitely not, grass in adjacent shaded yards to a degree where I don't see the same sort of thinning going on. I don't know.
Right. Well, I mean, you could try just reseeding it and getting some contact in. It could be that the grass that's there is just not well suited for that environment on a slope. So look for a grass mixture with a relatively high amount of fine fescue in it. Does great on slopes, well adapted to that situation. And
what would be a high amount percentage?
Well, let's say more than 50%.
Okay.
So a mixture that's dominated by chewings and hard fescues, which are collectively called fine fescues. So I'd start there. Try to reseed it. You're going to have to rake it up, maybe buy some compost, get really good seed to soil contact. That's the theme of the show here. Step on it. Keep it irrigated while it's germinating. Just try to thicken it up that way. And then if you continue to have issues, we have a wonderful turfgrass diagnostic lab that will assess problems with homeowners' lawns for a small fee. So if you have a strange one, that's a really good resource to use.
All right. There we go. Good luck, Chad. Thank you so much for calling. And Josh in Duluth, Minnesota. We'll go there. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you for taking it. I got a question. I got a new construction house. I just actually got my lawn to grow this past month. My question is how long, should I let it grow before I do that first cut?
That's a great question. I think a lot of people make a mistake on this one. They wait. They wait till it's as thick as possible. I say as soon as it's tall enough to get hit by a mower blade is when you should start mowing it. And the reason I say that is because there's a bunch of weeds out there that just won't tolerate it. So it helps keep those types of weeds out. And then it also sends a signal to the grass that, hey, we better start moving sideways and thickening up. And so mow it as soon as it's high enough. If you want to mow your lawn at 3 inches, when it's 3.5 inches or 4 inches, give it a cut and then just keep going.
Yeah, there you go, Josh. Get the mower out. Let's go to Alex next. Hi, Alex in Delavan.
Hi. We are newer homeowners, so don't have much experience with lawns, but I have a pretty full lawn. It's just that it's full with clover and creeping charlie and other larger weeds. But the issue is I don't know how to treat it because we have dogs. It's pretty shaded, lots of, like, dappled sunlight, so I'd say it's, like, 50-50 sunlight. Is there anything we can do naturally to cut down on the weeds?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have there's definitely a, so like Joan said earlier from Lake Mills, clover is really good. I like clover in my lawn. I think it just allows me to fertilize less, so I don't like that. Getting rid of that. A lot of people don't like ground ivy or creeping charlie because it's so aggressive. And so what you can do is the number one option would be to spot spray things. So don't just blanket and cover every square inch, but just put the treatment right where the plant is that you're trying to get rid of, and that way you can encourage the clover to survive and be a pollinator. And then there are probably the best alternative herbicides on the market right now contain iron, so they might be called Iron X or EcoSense or Fiesta. There's a bunch of different names, but they contain iron. HEDTA is the active ingredient. A very natural ingredient that tends to kill broadleaf weeds before it will kill grass, and it basically kills them by iron toxicity. So we'd say that's probably one of the best alternative strategies. However, it won't kill the roots, and a lot of times you're looking at repeat applications. So you can try one of those iron HEDTA products for an alternative solution to get rid of weeds.
Yeah. I've actually gone out on the lawn with my daughter and pulled creeping charlie, and you can pull a heck of a lot of it, and even though it's in the grass, and then that sort of, it's still there, but the grass gets a better foothold.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, pulling weeds is a lost art. They make some pretty nice tools now to help you pop dandelions out, and creeping charlie's relatively easy to pull up by hand. It's just something, you just add it to your routine. You're going to do every time you mow the lawn, you're going to go around and pick weeds.
There you go, Alex.
Yeah.
And you can pick a lot in 15 minutes.
Sure.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. Break it up. Break it up into small sections.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Eli in Menominee, your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a problem with cranes. Like a family of cranes is coming into our lawn, and they're devastating our front lawn, basically, and all the grass is being uprooted, and they're digging up something, but I'm not exactly sure what the heck they're digging up.
That's some grubs in there, maybe?
Yeah, that's funny. In the last couple of years, we've noticed more sandhill cranes, even at our research center and in my neighborhood in Madison, too. I haven't seen the damage that they've done, but I don't doubt that they can really rip it up. They're like Larry said, they're likely searching for grubs. I'm not sure that there's much you can or want to do about that. I don't know, Larry, you have any thoughts on cranes?
There's, other than just chasing them off or killing the grubs.
Right.
I mean, you can, if there are, if you know the kind of grub you're dealing with, I guess you can eliminate the grubs with some chemicals,
but
if you want to
go
that way.
They're likely after earthworms and other things that aside from grubs that are still going to be there. Just making it very inconvenient for them to be on your lawn is probably the scare them to your neighbors.
Unfortunately, that's all we got for you today, Eli. Thanks very much for calling. Oh, boy. Carol in Green Bay, we'll turn to you.
Hello.
Hi.
We have a problem with our grass, our lawn. After Memorial Day, we noticed that great big patches, well, I would say 6 or 8 inches of our lawn had, the grass was kind of flattened out and brown, just like a bunny sat on it or something. And we have hundreds of them. And they aren't coming back after the rain. So I don't know what's needing to be done. Our lawn is 17 years old now, and it was beautiful always before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, dead spots are really hard to diagnose, especially over the radio, even with pictures, because a lot of things that kill grass look the same. So next time, I mean, right now, the best time to grow grass is right now. And I imagine you have Kentucky bluegrass as part of your lawn, and it will fill in. It'll creep over and fill in those spots. So I'd encourage you to fertilize your lawn maybe once, maybe twice this fall to encourage that to spread back. And then next May, keep an eye out. Maybe it's a chinch bug. Can you see something around those spots where you said a bunny kind of looked like a bunny laid on it? Send in a sample to the Turfgrass Diagnostic Lab. Maybe it's a disease. It could be an insect. And then they can give you a diagnosis and hopefully a solution to that will prevent the grass from completely dying.
But for now, fertilize and...
For now, all you can do, I think, is just fertilize your lawn, and the good weather will help that Kentucky bluegrass fill in those dead spots.
Thanks, Carol, for calling. Scott in Wausau. Hello.
Are you there?
Yes. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I got three quick questions. Aeration, when and how often? 2, liming under pine trees, is that worth it? And 3, large moss infiltration in a house up north, low water table, it's in shade. What would be a good cover to possibly grow grass on top? That's it.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Lots of good stuff there. So timing for aeration is anytime now through October. This is the best time to aerate, and the reason we do that is you're creating little holes in the ground, which are great for growing new roots, great for infiltration, but you're also creating new places where weeds might germinate, and there's not a lot of weeds that germinate in the fall. So that's why we say aerate in the fall, don't aerate in the spring when the weeds are germinating. But perfect time to do that is now. Liming under pine trees, it's very, very difficult to grow grass under pine trees, and acidity is maybe one of the more minor reasons. So the dense shade, the competition for nutrient and water uptake are probably the main things that prevent grass from growing under those pine trees. You can try to lime under the lime tree. I would suggest taking a soil sample, sending it into the soil testing lab in Marshfield, University of Wisconsin lab. They'll give you recommendations for exactly how much to apply to grow a lawn. But my guess is that's probably not going to make the grass under pine trees grow much better. Might be just a minor thing. And then the last question about moths, I didn't quite catch that. Something about
I have a house up north. It has a low water table, so the water is pretty close. It's sandy soil, but on top there's this big patch of moss. It's like a big sponge. I didn't know if there's anything I could cover that with, peat or some other type of compost to possibly grow grass on top.
Oh, yeah, that's tough. When you have, most grasses like dry feet. So you have that high water table or water table near the surface. They're going to have shallow roots, and plants like moss are just going to love it. I honestly think that that's not going to be a very good situation. There is one specialty grass that does well in wet shade. Is it shady, Scott? Are you still there?
Yeah, there's big pine trees that block out the west sun. So
you can try. There's a specialty grass called Sapina bluegrass. It's very difficult to find. It's very expensive. But when you have wet, shady areas, it's the best thing you can do. It doesn't do well in full sun, doesn't like dry. So you can try finding some Poa Sapina bluegrass. It's very expensive. But maybe just buy a pound or two, try it out in some areas, and if it works, you might want to expand that. But for constantly wet areas, grass is usually going to lose out.
When you're talking about expensive, what would a pound, what's the range on a pound of Poa supina?
You don't want to know. Like $30 a pound, $40 a pound, where normal grass seed is like $3, $4 a pound. So it's really expensive. I'm not promoting this website, but it's one that I know I can usually find Poa supina on. It's seedsuperstore.com. They have a wide selection of grass varieties, and Poa supina is usually one that's on their market. It's hard, it's difficult grass to find.
Yeah, because it's so expensive. It's expensive. It doesn't sell.
It's one person holds the rights to it in Germany, and it's very low seed production. So it's a supply demand thing. But we have some at University Ridge Golf Course.
Yeah,
it's been used all over the state on soccer fields, and it's a useful grass for unique situations.
And where did you say, what was the place that you
Seed Superstore.
SeedSuperstore.com. Scott, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Paula in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Paula.
Hello. So I'm having some problems. I have a mature lawn that's about 15 years old, and I have ants all over the front lawn every year, and it thins out the lawn. It recovers in the spring, but now in the fall again, here I go again, and it's getting thin. What is your suggestion on that, and does it actually kill the grass as well?
Are these ants?
Yep, there's little mounds all over the front lawn.
Little?
Anywhere from like the size of my hand to maybe twice the size of my hand.
Okay.
Yeah, ants are a difficult problem to rectify. I think the best solution from the insect folks here at UW is to find a bait and jam the bait all the way down into the center of the mound.
You need a rod.
Yeah, like with a rod, right? So the goal with ants is you need to kill the queen. If you don't kill the queen, you're going to lose that battle. And so you need to get the queen's protected deep down. So you need to find a way to eliminate the queen. So it's nothing that you're going to be spraying over, broadcast the lawn, but finding a bait and then getting that with a rod as deep as possible.
Yeah, usually it's you can apply in liquid form and kind of make that hole with the rod, pound it down as deep as you can go, and then pour that bait in.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do. I've heard Phil Pelletieri explain that many a time on this show. There you go, Paula. Thanks. Does that help?
Yeah, that'll help, and I have to do that to each one of the mounds. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I will do that.
All right. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Doug Soldat, our guest today, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. He talks with us a few times a year about your lawn, and that's what he's doing today. Questions about lawn care or seeding or reseeding, give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Denise in Watertown will give you a chance now. Hi, Denise.
Hi. My husband's going to love to hear my voice on here. I used a herbicide to kill crabgrass, like, in May. Unfortunately, it had things that killed the grass, too. So we've got some big bare spots where I thought I was going to get rid of just the crabgrass. So what would be the herbicide chemical residue life in that? And would I be able to successfully replant that now? There are some weeds coming up, some crabgrass and some clover and just a few little things in these bare spots. Otherwise, it's dead.
And what chemical did you use? Do you remember?
Well, I'm not sure. I thought I used something that just killed crabgrass, but it killed more than just the crabgrass.
Right. Okay, so without knowing the chemical, it's difficult to say, but if a common one that kills everything is Roundup, or glyphosate is the active ingredient, and you can actually seed new grass almost immediately after a Roundup application because it binds to the soil. What I would say is, if you still have the product, do you still have the product?
I do. As a matter of fact, I am actually looking at it right now. So it's called the Eliminator.
Yeah, okay. There's a lot of different names. We need to know the active ingredient. I would say, if you want to email me afterwards, I can definitely address the specific chemical or mixture of chemicals for you. But in general, if you start to see plants that are growing up, it's a good indication that you're okay to seed back into that. And most of the products on the market, you are, with a few exceptions, you are able to seed very shortly after.
Within at least a couple of weeks.
Yeah, within a week or so.
Yeah. There you go, Denise. Thank you for calling. And Sharon in Madison. Hello.
Well, hello there.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I know that you advise that man from Illinois who has a lot of shade because his yard backs up to a woods. I know you suggested that they do some ground cover or something like that, but I think you should have been more specific and not to contradict you. I don't want to sound nasty or anything, but I think you should have told him to plant native wildflowers. We're worried about the butterflies and the beneficial insects, so I think people should be made more aware of that.
Yeah, and there's so many good options, right? So as long as the wildflowers are adapted to that shade, that's a great option. What my point was, grass isn't a good choice, and consider something that is adapted to that. And if you have shade adapted native flowers, native ground cover, whatever, I think you're right. That's a good choice.
Yeah, excellent choice. Thanks, Sharon, for calling. Appreciate it. And Tom in Oshkosh, we'll go to you next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I guess my question is, so when I had my house built 15 years ago, they obviously did the finished grade, and I put the lawn in myself. I'll have to say I'm pretty proud of how it turned out. I bought good seed. The lawn, I fertilize at least a couple times a year, keep the weeds down. But I do see some unevenness, and I've done soil samples and sent them into Marshfield. But my question is, could it possibly have been when they did the finished grade that, in some parts of the lawn there's maybe an inch or two of quality topsoil, and maybe some places there's 6 or 8 inches? And I guess what I'm wondering is, in some of the areas where the lawn just doesn't thrive as well as others, would it be applicable to scrape off 6-8 inches and bring in a little more topsoil? Good quality topsoil, or just by fertilizing over the years, should it all kind of come around? Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And that's a good question. And I think what you're on the right track there is that you likely, if you do have areas in your lawn that do better or worse, and they have the same amount of light, they have the same amount of water, a lot of times the issues are in the soil. So maybe the area that's doing more poorly, it's been compacted, it's got less topsoil, less organic matter, and you start to see it struggle. So if it sounds like you enjoy your lawn, you like to observe what's going on, you can absolutely treat it differently. So I would say, if the grass is green and healthy in one area and thin in the other, you can just fertilize that thinner area because it's likely a difference in organic matter, and that means less nutrients for the plant. The other thing you could do, scraping it off and bringing in 6 to 8 inches, that seems really disruptive to me. I would probably say, well, let's get some compost and then start spreading the compost in the areas where the grass isn't quite as thick. But my guess is that you are looking at some differences in the way the soil was prepared, and that's resulting in the differences in quality.
I like that compost idea, and then you could couple that with the fertilizing.
This is what you go to a golf course, and they're managing their areas, their different greens, the ones that have problems, the ones that look good. They're doing different things to those areas. They're giving it just what they need. So if you're making those observations, go ahead and start managing them differently and see if you can make them look the same.
Yeah, there we go, Tom. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had an email from Craig. He sent a photo of, I think it's a lot, it's, things are kind of dead there. He wonders if what we're seeing is caused by grubs.
Yeah, I'm looking at this photo now, and it's mostly dead grass with a few little patches of things that are living, and it doesn't look like a typical grub damage pattern to me. Right now, Craig, if you're listening, you go out, dig it up, and if it's grubs, you're going to find them. There's in a square foot of soil, you're going to come across more than 12 to get at least, you know, with the damage that you're showing here, you probably have like 20 per square foot if it's grubs. But if you don't see grubs there, white C-shaped grubs, this is likely something else. And unfortunately, you know, just looking at this picture, I'm not able to come up with a good diagnosis for you. But again, Turfgrass Diagnostic Lab here in Madison, or you can email me more pictures and we can chat about it after the show.
All right, there we go. Thank you so much for that email. And let's take a call from Bob in Madison. Bob, hi.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Hi, Doug. You know, I really, everybody likes a green lawn. And I worry a little bit that we want them to be too perfect. And I am a little concerned about the chemical approach that you take to pest control as opposed to cultural, or just recognizing that the lawns don't always have to be perfect. The chemicals generate a lot of pollution, as does the cutting of the lawn with gas-powered equipment. And we all know that gas-powered equipment generates hundreds of times more pollution than our automobiles do. And even the storage of gasoline generates horrible amounts of pollution. So I guess I'd like to ask people not to work on the perfect green lawn and just a nice green lawn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's something we do here. You know, my I have a tough job. You know, I'm Turfgrass, state Turfgrass Extension Specialist, and I view my job as to get everybody whatever their goal is. I try to do that in the most environmentally responsible way possible. So you have Miller Park, right? They have a really unique set of situations. We work with them to try to make them provide that product with the minimal amount of environmental impact possible. And then when you take that over the 2 million homes in Wisconsin, you have a lot of variability. You have some folks that want this perfect green lawn, and you know, that's their choice. And our research is like, how do you get, you know, if you want a perfectly uniform green lawn, what's the best way to do that? But on the other hand, we're also doing research where we say, what if you don't even want to mow it? Like, what's the best mixture of plants to use if you don't want to do anything? And of course, all that's contextualized by the things you're saying about, you know, carbon use and chemicals. So it's definitely something that, you know, I'm not able to take a stand and say, this is the only way you should do it. But I think your points are really important to bring up, is that we do want to provide whatever the function of the lawn is with the least amount of inputs possible. I think I've seen a lot more of these robotic electric mowers now.
Yeah.
I think that's really going to revolutionize the fuel use on lawns, especially as we shift more towards renewable energy. But those things save you time, and they're good quality cut. A professor in my department has it, and he's just raves about it. He doesn't have to mow his lawn looks great, and it runs off of electricity instead of fuel. So I think, you know, the innovation will continue to improve the situation. But great, great points, Bob.
So the robots actually run around the lawn and mow it?
Yeah, you set down a perimeter with like a wire, right? And then it just kind of does a random walk every day. So it's constant. And then when it's low on battery, it goes back and it charges itself. And It's pretty cool. Yeah, I have to admit, I'm thinking about trying one out on my lawn. They're a little expensive now, but I think the prices are going to come down. And
what do you mean by a little expensive?
Well, you know, I think the cheapest one on the market, you're looking at like $500, and there several of them are above $1,000, $1,200 right now. But you know, it's a new mower is going to cost you $300 or $400, I think, gas mower.
Yeah, right. That's right. And I can remember somebody on the show, and this is a long time back, we were talking about pollution with lawnmowers, and the expert I had on at that time said, the average size lawn, if you mow the average size lawn, you are sending out about the same amount of pollution if you took your car and drove it from Madison to Chicago.
Yeah.
On the average lawn.
Yeah, I don't have, I don't know the stats on that.
I have no idea if that's correct anymore.
Small engines have much less stringent emissions controls. So the catalytic converter's taking, some of the really nasty stuff out of your car emissions, but they're not there in the small engines.
And back to the robot for a minute. So you have to put a wire around your entire lawn?
Yeah, right. So there's that set up. But, it's not for how much labor it saves you from having to mow your lawn all summer long. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I actually have an electric, but mine is a cord.
Yeah.
It runs, I've got an extension cord, and I mow it high enough that I can run right over the cord.
Sure.
Without cutting up the cord, although I have to admit to one mistake. At one point where the cord was kind of curled, but I like it, and I don't have to fool around with gas.
Yeah.
It's really, really nice as far as I'm concerned. Well, I tell you what, always lots of things to talk about with Doug Soldat. He is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. I haven't mentioned UW Extension. Glad that he did just now because, of course, he works for UW Extension. PhD in horticulture, specializing in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, water, soil testing, landscape irrigation. Our guest on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest Doug Soldat, UW-Madison and UW Extension soil scientist. He specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, water, all kinds of things. Great to talk about your lawn, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Shelley in Appleton's been waiting a bit, so let's go there. Shelley, thanks for waiting.
Thank you for taking my call. I am calling because I have a lawn that has some pretty big, I think they're totally dead patches. Excuse me. We have a kind of a clay soil where we are, and every year we get the dry in July and August, and the lawn kind of, that we don't water. And it kind of dries out and gets that straw color. And then when we get some good rain, it all comes back. But this doesn't look like that nice, like I have grass still and it's just that straw color. This looks like matted down black, gray, and I get a nice big rain like we had last week and it's not coming back.
Yeah.
So my question is, what can I do? Is there anything I can do this fall to try to get something started, or is this something I have to wait until next spring to...
This is the perfect time. You called it the right time. So it definitely sounds dead when you see black and gray and mushy, grass. That's dead. And it's a big enough area that we can't just rely on the bluegrass to creep back in and fill it. So what I would do is, go get some seed. Again, well, like we said earlier in the show, if you can sod it, sometimes sodding is the easiest, best way to get a nice cover there. But if you want to seed it, now is perfect time. Get yourself a rake. Loosen up the soil with the top 4 inches with a shovel. It's a lot of labor. Rake it through. Put the seed down. Rake it again. About a quarter. You're looking to get the seed buried only about a quarter inch, and then tamp it down with your feet. Just to get some good seed to soil contact. Put a straw mulch over the top of that, and then just kind of make sure that it's not drying out. So sometimes that means you have to water it twice a day. Sometimes it means you don't have to water it for a week if it's kind of raining and cloudy. But the grass should come up now. It should thicken up and be ready to go by next year.
All right. There we go, Shelley. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Stephen, Fountain City, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hello. And I have a question concerning a lawn that I admittedly has been neglected for 10, 12 years. It's another piece of property I've owned, and we just haven't been taking care of it. So we're looking at selling this property. It's quite a big lawn, but the portion I'm most concerned about is what's immediately in front of the house. And that is a lawn that my wife would describe with having quackgrass, creeping Charlie, crabgrass, anything other than grass is growing, if you want to call it that. It's been inundated with moles throughout the year. There is a big overgrown apple tree shading part of the lawn, so that's kind of bare. And we have a number of dogs that run around. So is there anything I can do to help this thing along to make it look better? Not perfect, just better, before we get on the market.
Now you're going to sell it this fall? And how big is the area?
No, it won't be this fall. No, it probably won't be till next year sometime. But if we could do anything to it this fall, and from what I've been listening to, some of the responses that this is a good time to plant, but I don't know if we need to rototill it till. At one time, I thought of sodding it, and I said, nope, I'm not going to go that route. So other than that, is there anything we could do?
Steve, I would I'd encourage you to sell it in the winter. snow does wonders at hiding a bad lawn. No, just kidding. Okay, so a lawn that's kind of been let go like this, that you don't want to take care of long term. I think I'm always impressed at how much improvement you can make with a single application of a broadleaf herbicide. So again, we've talked a lot about ways to avoid using chemicals when possible. But if you're trying to make something look pretty in a quick amount of time, short amount of time, we can't rely on ecology. So I recommend an application of a standard herbicide in the fall, right? You know, this time, September, October, and then a standard application of nitrogen fertilizer in the fall, and then another one in the spring. And, you know, you said a whole bunch of different issues, but just those three things, one herbicide and then two treatments of nitrogen, I think will get that lawn looking good. Now, the most important thing is how you mow it. So sharp mower blade, mow it at about 3 inches, and don't remove more than a third of the tissue at any one time. So that means you have to mow it at least every week. And by mowing with a sharp blade, a couple fertilizer applications, that lawn is going to look 100% better by next spring.
Steve, that help?
Yes. So you're saying that's not mowing next spring when that season starts. That's including mowing it now for the duration.
Yep.
Before it's built.
Yep. Do you know? Get the blade out. Make sure you got a sharp blade. I've seen just people's lawns turn around just from changing the mower blade. So if you have a sharp mower blade, your grass starts looking good immediately.
All right. I'll give that a try. That sounds great. I appreciate it.
Yep. Good luck.
Thanks, Steve. And Tom in Kimberly. Hello.
Yes, I've got a section of my lawn, fairly large section of it, that's got some dead spots in it. About 50% of the grass is dead, and it tends to be in circular pattern. And this has been going on for a year or two. This year, I overseeded it, and I did not dig it up. I just raked the seed in, so I'm using the dead grass as a mulch. And the blend is primarily perennial ryegrass, and there's a couple varieties of fescue and about 10% of bluegrass. And I seeded about a week ago to take advantage of this rain. I know the bluegrass is going to take the longest to germinate. How long is it going to take to germinate, and how long should I water it?
Yeah.
It's pretty wet after all this rain.
Right. So the perennial ryegrass should start to germinate in about now. So it takes about 7 days for that. The fine fescues are just a little slower, maybe 10 days. So you should start to see those grasses come up. But that 10% bluegrass, it can take 21 to 28 days. And a lot of times what we'll see is it just doesn't come up because there's so many things that can go wrong in that 21 to 28 day period. The good news is you only have 10% of the mix as the Kentucky bluegrass. So you'll probably see the ryegrass and the fescues come up. And the you want to keep them the main point here is to encourage the bluegrass to come up. You do want to keep it moist for 28 days.
All right. There we go. Good luck, Tom. Thank you. And Dan in Hartford, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hello, Larry and Doug. I have a question on Kentucky bluegrass and the fun rusty stuff that gets on your feet, the orange stuff. Why is that called a rust? What is it? And I notice it on my longer Kentucky bluegrass when I, let it go 4 inches or so. And I do have a couple other questions. Should I ask them now or later?
Well, let's start with the rust. Yeah. Rust is a really common midsummer. It's a fungus, so it produces these red spores, which you see on your feet. The best thing, the way to get rid of them, is to encourage your grass to grow, which is usually irrigation, fertilizer, and when it's hot, grasses just don't grow, which is why we see them hanging around in the summer. So you should see the rust start to go away now as the temperatures come down, the grass starts to grow. You can put an application of fertilizer out to encourage it to grow even more, and that's just usually kind of a cosmetic thing.
There you go. Thank you. You had other questions. Sorry.
Question.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things I see, and I help friends establish lawns just as a fun thing to do, people don't realize that first hair root that sneaks out from the germination process is extremely dryable from even just one day of sun.
Yeah.
How do you, and the straw and the stuff you put on it, it still doesn't get enough water. And so I try to encourage them the 7 to 20 days out to just douse it with a little bit of water. What's a better plan than that, rather than mulching it or doing stuff over it sometimes?
Well, getting it buried. So we've said a few times, quarter inch down, and that protection from, if you're a quarter inch down in the soil, that's going to be insulated from those daily dry cycles. So it'll allow you to get a little bit of protection from that. But if you have seed on the surface, like you said, it's going to dry out and it's not going to make it. You got to get it, buried in the soil, but not too deep, so it can emerge. But you're right, it's a grass can be a finicky thing to grow in.
And, just all this talk about rust got me thinking again about your lawnmower and the sharpness of the blades, because I think you've talked in the past about this. If your blades aren't sharp, your blades of grass are going to look a little almost rusty in a way.
Yeah, they actually get these white tips. So you'll start to see the fibers stick out the top, and you'll see kind of a whitish color. And that means your blades are way too dull. So if you see that, you don't want to see that at all. They'll stop growing. It's a stress. They'll slow their growth. But if you get them a nice clean cut, they'll start to grow again faster.
On to another caller, Colleen in Onalaska. Your turn. Hi, Colleen.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think the mole family has a family reunion in my front yard this year, and they are all over. And I've tried putting some poison grubs down, but they just—I think there's too many moles, and I don't know what to do anymore. What to use?
Usually, one or two moles. A couple of moles can make it look like there's 20 of them out there, but.
They're difficult. I think David Drake, does he recommend this? I think the spear traps.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There's not a really good solution to your answer. So you can try the baits, like you've said, and you haven't had success with that. And I think the next solution to try would be it's a spear trap. So you place it over one of the tunnels, and they. When they run through their tunnel, it triggers it, and then it goes through and kind of stabs the mole. So that would be an option you can try.
There's another one that a caller had a lot of success with involving a trap where you actually open up one of the pathways, put a hole in it, and then you get some bacon that's half-cooked, and you bait a trap with like a mouse trap or rat trap with the bacon, and then you put that in there, and then you put like a 5-gallon pail or something over the top of that. And he did trap, I forget, six or eight out of his lawn with that method. And because it's covered, then the, you know, the dog isn't going to, you know, or somebody else isn't going to step on the trap. And also then the aroma from the bacon apparently is something that the moles find.
Everybody likes bacon.
Everybody likes bacon. So that's another method that doesn't cost anything or much, and you could give that a shot and see if it works.
Yeah, sometimes we hear, well, you got to get rid of the grubs because that's what they're eating, but they actually eat a lot of stuff that they eat earthworms, and so usually just eliminating grubs in your lawn isn't going to do it.
Not going to do it.
So trapping them, I think, is probably the next thing to try.
Colleen, if you try that trap system, call me back and let me know how it works, will you?
All right, I will.
Thanks a lot for calling. You do need to, you know, dig a little hole or open up that tunnel.
Yeah, right, dig tunnels, right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to Deborah in Milwaukee next. Hi, Deborah.
Hello, you guys. Well, here on our mini golf course, we have a lot of creeping Charlie, which is, by the way, listed in my Peterson's medicinal plant book as having anti-cancer properties. So, but we do have someone, the homeowner, mows the lawn and leaves the grass clippings there, and the grass hasn't gone to seed. And it just, I end up going out there and raking it up, and it looks awful. It, like, rots it. So, I mean, I suggested, like, letting it go to seed and then doing that. But what is the deal with leaving clippings on the lawn?
So you definitely should leave the clippings on the lawn because they contain nitrogen that acts as a natural fertilizer. So we find that when you return the clippings of the lawn, you get the equivalent of one fertilizer application that you would get from a store or a service. So there's a lot there. But when they're rotting on the lawn and you have to rake them up, it sounds like that's a mower issue. So you can switch to a mulching mower, which will chop the blades up into smaller pieces. That's what I would recommend. Or the other thing that could be going on, if you do have a mulching mower and you're still getting piles of grass, is you're just not the homeowner's not mowing often enough. So we have this rule, it's called the one-third rule. Never cut more than one-third of the plant off at any one time. And so if you let your grass get really long, you're probably removing more than half, and then that leaves the clippings on the lawn, and it's a mess. Like you said, you have to rake them up. Mm-hmm. But if you mow properly, you should be able to get those clippings down where you don't even see them. So that's what I'd recommend you try to figure out.
Yeah, and set that mowing height around 3 inches and...
Yeah, another thing people think, one of the big misconceptions is that if you mow low, then you don't have to mow so much.
Yeah.
And it's actually wrong. What we found in our research is if you mow your grass low, it grows faster because the plant wants to have enough leaf area to absorb the sunlight. So when you shave it down low, it says, oh, we're going to grow really fast. But if you mow your lawn at like 3 inches, 3.5 inches, it slows its growth rate down and you actually have to mow it less often.
Yeah. There you go, Deborah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Bruce in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bruce.
How are you guys?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I have bent grass in my yard, and I had heard of a herbicide called Tenacity. I was wondering if you guys could comment on that. And the other option I had was just to kill it all off and start over.
Yeah. So bent grass is one of the worst weeds you can have in your lawn. It grows in big patches. It browns out in the summer. And it's, really messes up the uniformity. So two options for it are, like you said, kill everything. And a lot of times we'll recommend removing the soil from where that patch was because bent grass will propagate from stolons and it can regrow easily. But there is this chemical that you mentioned called Tenacity, which is one of the newer herbicides. So we've been talking a lot about chemical control and the hazards of that. But Tenacity is a product that's derived from the bottle brush plant, which prevents other grasses from growing underneath its base. So that grows out in California. So Tenacity is kind of a mimic of that chemical. And it does well at killing bent grass without killing Kentucky bluegrass. Now, the trick with Tenacity is you have to apply it about every 2 weeks for 3 or 4 times in a row, and it turns everything white. So it's a very kind of jarring look to it. But that application... will generally take care of the creeping bentgrass without killing your Kentucky bluegrass.
There you go, Bruce. Thank you. We had Amy call to say she's digging up her lawn and replanting. Should she do anything about the weeds in the lawn before she does the replanting?
Nope, not really. That's one of the nice things about redoing the lawn is you don't have to worry about the things that are there in general. I think, you know, it makes it a much easier to work with if you do kill the vegetation and get rid of all the living material there. Otherwise, the roots really clump onto the soil and you have these big clumps. But depending on the implement you're using, that's not necessary just to get rid of weeds. Like I said, it'll make preparation a lot easier if you use something to eliminate all the plants.
And Gary in Richland Center wondered about grasses to plant on a wooded logging road. Trees are deciduous. He'd like the grass so it's not so muddy and he can cut it.
Yeah, that's a good good question. The best grass that's going to handle compaction and traffic like that is something called tall fescue. Tall fescue. It's very different than the fine fescues we've been talking about for much of the show, but tall fescue is going to be the best grass you can plant for this type of logging road situation. It's a little coarser, it's a little thicker. It's not something we often recommend in lawns for that reason, but it'll do just great for this situation.
It'll take shade then, obviously.
Yep, takes shade a bit, takes compaction. It's really tough grass. Yeah.
Sue emailed to ask about robotic lawnmowers. Back to the robotics. Do they do edging, and how well do they work on slopes?
Yeah, the good questions, and I think those are two areas where you still have to edge, so they're not going to get all the areas up next to the house. And the slopes, they are limited by slope. I was talking to Larry at break about that, and I can't remember what the exact limitations are, but if you do have some slopes in your lawn, you want to make sure that the mower's specifications can handle those slopes.
That makes a lot of sense. And somebody else asked about no-mow lawns. What type of grass do you recommend for if you're only going to want to mow this thing once or twice a year, and otherwise it's a no-mow?
Yeah. Yeah, no-mows they're basically the fine fescues, the chewings fescues, the hard fescues, red fescues, sheep's fescue, just not tall fescue. Tall fescue is not a no-mow grass. But if you use those other fescues, the fine fescues, those generally do very well under limited or no-mow situations.
So, and then you do need to mow it. No-mow means you still have to mow, don't you?
No-mow means probably want to mow it at least once a year, twice a year. to remove the vegetation, usually in the fall. Also, the thing that I like about the fine fescues, they produce a natural herbicide that keeps other weeds out. So generally, when you plant these fine fescues, you don't have as much weed pressure as you do in a lot of other grasses.
Yeah, I've got a couple of lawns in our neighborhood that that went that way, and you don't see any other weeds or anything in those. Although it seems a little thinner somehow, but
definitely, yep, yeah. Not quite as dense, but. But very nice. Mm-hmm.
Well, Doug, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us today. Answered a lot of questions, and you'll be back again, I hope, and we'll
Great.
Do this all over.
Yeah, thanks, Larry.
Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison and UW-Extension. He talks all kinds of things and studies turfgrass, soils, water, nutrient management, as you've learned as you listen to him today. Great to have him along. He'll be back. Monday, we'll talk with the author of a book that looks at the forgotten art of love. And then 11:45, talk about how Milwaukee won and lost the Braves baseball team. Stay with us. Lots in store.